Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
England will play Italy in the Euro 2020 final after a nerve-jangling triumph over Denmark at Wembley. So much to dissect, let's get into it.
It's England! England at last! English history! England into a European Championship final for the very first time!
Hi everyone, David Wiener with you once again for the second last episode of the Gagapod during the Euros. And boy, what a morning we've had at Optus Sport. England 2, Denmark 1. Controversy as Harry Kane puts the Three Lions into the final of the European Championships at Wembley. What a morning it has been. And I've been stressed and I'm a neutral. So I've got John Aloisi in the neutral corner with me. But Michael Bridges and Thomas Sorensen, what a morning. I know it's been an emotional morning for you both. Thanks for sticking around. Bridgie, how are you feeling?
Absolutely ecstatic, Dave. History has been made. We witnessed an incredible match. Both teams going at it. And I'm looking forward to doing the podcast, getting home, and I'm going to drink a bottle of champagne to celebrate. History was made.
Bridgie had to change three shirts during the show. He was sweating that much.
I was sweating. I was. And Tommy was winding us up because obviously Denmark took the lead. All we got was this big Danishman standing in the middle of the studio with his arms in the air like Freddie Mercury in front of Wembley fans. And they went 1-0 up and it really, really had me nervous.
Tommy, you proud? Angry? Well, how do you feel?
Nah, you know we probably will talk about the penalty. But I think overall... You know, very proud. I think they, from where we were a couple of weeks ago, you know, how they picked themselves up and then went on to inspire the whole country because, you know, everyone I've spoken to back home, you know, bought into this. You know, it's been a tough time with COVID and everything else. And then for the Christian Eriksen thing to happen and to then... push England all the way. I think you know they can hold their heads high, and you know they did what they could. I think they ran out of legs a little bit at the end. Probably the substitution didn't have the bench that England had, but kept fighting to the end. So yeah, as a Dane, very proud.
It was a great morning all round of entertainment. John, as the objective man in the middle, your assessment on both the match and the boys' behaviour.
The boys' behaviour, I'll go on to that later, but the first half in general was that intensity was great. I just loved it from both sides. You know, Denmark pressed well. I thought when they actually sat in that 4-5-1, they limited the spaces for England a lot of the time. And then when they were going forward, they looked dangerous. Damsgaard was very good. Dolberg did very well. I thought Braithwaite had his best game in the tournament. I know he didn't get on the score sheet or didn't score, but he was doing well. But as soon as that second half came along and they had to start making subs, you saw that they didn't have the depth as much as England have in their squad. And, you know, England, you'd have to say over the 120 minutes deserved to win. And they deserve to be in the final because they've been one of the form sides. They've been great defensively. And you could just see Thomas was a little bit more relaxed probably than Bridgie because Thomas was thinking that, you know, he was happy with the way the team was playing, obviously, going 1-0 up, but also confident in, you know, they were happy to be in that position, really, from the start. And then Bridgie started to come alive when they went 2-1 up very late on.
Well,
very alive.
Very alive. Still alive. Still going. We normally begin at the beginning. Today, we have to begin at the end because that's what the whole football world is talking about right now is that moment, that penalty where Raheem Sterling got to the right, got to the box, cut in. Penalty.
Got scythed down. As he entered the penalty area and he got scythed down.
Oh. Do you want a neutral perspective?
So we go first? Neutral and then 1-2. And also, when you talk about them deserving it, I must reveal that Thomas actually foreshadowed this sitting there watching it because the momentum was all with England. You actually mentioned, John, Raheem Sterling looks dangerous every time he gets in the box. And then what happened?
Yeah, look, Raheem Sterling, he's positive. And once he starts to run at plays, it's very hard to stop him. And what he does, because he's got a low center of gravity, when he gets past you, he's able to quickly get in front of you as well and get across you. And then you just have to be careful. You're trying to stay out of the way, and sometimes you might clip him. A lot of the times the Danes did it really well. They didn't lunge in the box. They just kept their feet. They said, yeah, if you want to get past me, then you have to actually beat me. And so I thought they defended well, but you could see it coming because there was building. It was building, and they kept on getting into the box. Grealish was running into the box. Sometimes Kane was in the box. Then, Sterling was in there. I don't think it was a penalty. I don't think there was enough contact. If there was contact, it was very slight. I thought that he was already going down once he did get that contact. And I was disappointed that the referee didn't go check, or VAR didn't get him to go check. And now let's not take anything away from Sterling, because Sterling was brilliant again the whole game. For me, he was man of the match along with Kane, but no penalty.
Right, let me give you the honest assessment of that penalty decision. Mr. Aloisi.
Older.
Old.
Just because of the grey hair.
They called him John Older. Mr. Aloisi, the assessment of that penalty decision. Sterling drives into the penalty area. Yeah. There is minimal contact, no penalty. There you go.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's coming from an Englishman.
The more I look at it, the worse it gets. And I feel
very. That's coming from an Englishman.
You thought I was going to absolutely barrack and go for the penalty.
Because at the time, you actually thought. When it first happened, live, I thought it's a penalty. I thought someone touched him. I thought that it was, you know.
But, John, there is this minimal contact, but that, for me, it's slight. It's just a brush of the legs. For that, I'd decide a game of that magnitude, for them not to go and do the VAR. Tommy made an unbelievable analysis of it off air when we were just finishing up. I said to Tommy, what do you think? Why didn't it go to VAR?
So if that was in the Premier League, 99% of the time that would not be given.
No, not at all. But Tommy's, go on, tell him what you said.
You know what? You know. Looking at it, I think maybe it was a smart decision from the VAR room to not give that decision to the referee. You know, with the pressure, the whole situation, being at Wembley with the history, to then having him going over, and again, it was as slightest of touches. And the more he would have watched that on the screen, it would have talked him out of actually giving it. And had he got back on his decision, that would have been carnage. So it might not be the case. You know, I'm not saying, but if
I think it's a very good...
If they might have... And you showed me another picture where there is a slight touch.
Touch of knees.
There's a slight touch of knees.
But is it Marler or is it Jensen?
No, it's Marler.
Marler catches him and then he's already going down.
See, look at that. Look at that.
Yeah. No. But he showed me a picture and there's the slightest touches. And then can you then overturn it? You know, all those things.
So the way that I look at it, if it is Marler that they give the penalty for... I actually see Marler. He doesn't put up his hands. Usually, that's slight. That's a brush of hairs on their legs.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's very harsh. That's the VAR angle that they was given.
That's slight. Yeah, you know what? It's disappointing that decided the game.
Yeah, I think that's what we can come down to, because it was coming. You know, like even from a Danish perspective, I can stand here and say, you know what, we were on the cosh. We didn't really get out. We didn't produce much. And I think, like you said, John, the people that came on, I think Yusuf Poulsen, who's been good in this tournament, scored a couple of goals in the early games, but he didn't hold off the ball well. Where Dolberg in the first half, even Braithwaite at times, but he lost it. And that lost the momentum. And again, that built the pressure. And it was coming, the penalties.
How good was Kasper Schmeichel as well, by the way? You're a goalkeeper. Yeah. To show the game that he had shows how much England dominated this game with. I'm not gloating. He was magnificent for the amount of saves he had to make, because the other guy, Pickford, who's had an unbelievable tournament, we all say there's a moment of madness coming, and Pickford had a Pickford today, because he threw the ball to your strikers twice. He didn't look comfortable in goal. England have got the result. He'd be one very relieved man today.
And maybe even saying he could have saved the free kick. But I don't want to take, again, any quality away from the strike, because it was one strike. The way he actually hit that ball, Damsgaard, over the wall, the way it dipped, the power, it was Ericsson-esque, I would say. But I still think that probably another keeper on the day would have saved that.
Yeah, agree.
No better person to pay tribute to Kasper Schmeichel's performance than yourself, Tom. He actually broke Peter's record for the most saves made by a Dane in a knockout game at the Euros.
Yeah, no, he played a big game the day before.
Didn't you make that many saves in a knockout?
Nah.
So it's Schmeichel's record to Schmeichel. There's no Sorensen in there.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Probably third.
Probably.
I'm quite happy. That's quite decent. It's a good list to
be
on.
Yeah, but you know what? A sign of a good keeper is when you organise the defence in front of you. You don't concede that many chances.
Thank you, Johnny. Thank you. He obviously talked a big game the day before, but that's him. His confidence produced. And he produced. He was a leader, stood up. We're looking at it. He would be fuming in the dressing room with that penalty because he was there.
How didn't it parry out left? Why did it bounce back?
Because he over dived, didn't he?
It sort of comes on the inside of him, so he can't get the momentum to push it out. I think the only thing he could have done different was obviously maybe try to keep hold of it. But that now we're being really, really harsh. And he nearly saved the second one. Like, just look at the athleticism of him diving, turning, and then diving the other direction. It was close.
Johnny, you're a penalty taker. We all know what you did for Australia with your penalty. Could you imagine Kane as he sees Schmeichel going the right way and he saves it and you're thinking, my God, I've just cost my nation going. And then the ball falls at your feet to put it in the back of the net.
I can tell you now, I've hit a penalty before that the keeper has saved and it's come back my way. That half a second, your heart drops because you've gone, oh no, I just missed. And then all of a sudden your eyes light up and you go, yes.
Because it goes down as a normal goal, not actually a penalty.
Did you see the Kane celebration's obviously wild. Foden's chasing you. It's a beautiful image. And you can just see how much it means to him and it means absolutely everybody that was involved in it. But yeah, Kasper Schmeichel was absolutely immense. I'm just going to wrap up the chat. Going to go back to the chat on the penalty quickly, because there's another twist to it. The Athletic's Dominic Fifield, who has spoken to us a number of times on the Gagampod so far, he's been covering England for The Athletic. He noticed something else that has popped up as a controversy from Raheem Sterling's build-up to the goal.
Not only was the contact on Sterling pretty minimal, there was some on the thigh, but it was, whether it was enough to send him down, I'm not sure, but perhaps even more significant, there appeared to be two footballs on the pitch at the time. Sterling actually danced his way past one of them in the build-up to the goal. And it was only really one of the Danish substitutes that appeared to be drawing the assistant referee's eyes to that. And he was waved away, and the referee obviously had no issue with it. So play was waved on. I mean, looking back, if I was Danish, I'd be pretty fuming at that oversight.
Okay, so that's developed as we've been starting the podcast today, gents. Also, there's some chatter on social media that Kasper Schmeichel had some lasers or lights in his eyes as the penalty was being struck. That one I can't confirm in the time that we're on the podcast, but that is what is being said on social media.
I did see the photo. I saw the photo. The actual laser's right here. I don't know if it ends up going in his eye, but it is on his face. There's a photo of it on social media. Oof. And then I'm hearing, Thomas, there was someone in VAR as well.
What say you, Thomas? Well,
the latest rumour is Boris Johnson was in the VAR room. So, you know what? Everything fell for them.
I give up. I'm just pleased Sporta's not here because it would have been unfair.
Normally it's Florentino Perez. There's that classic meme of him every time Madrid play that he's in the box. It's good to see Boris. He's dealt with one thing. He's gone to the VAR box. Look, that's a pile on, but that's a lot of controversy.
That's probably the best decision Boris Johnson's ever made in his time. So there you go.
Dear, oh dear, we'll move on from the controversy because that was the deciding factor. But Bridgie, after 55 years of hurt, that is this cliche line, Lady Luck has shone on England.
Yep.
And that is ultimately what was the deciding factor today. But over the sum of 120 minutes, England's performance was
magnificent. Probably the best I've seen them this tournament because of the amount of chances they created going forward. I've got to say that because this Denmark team are superbly well organised. They had to find a way, and I think the interchange with Harry Kane dropping in for the first goal when you saw Saka getting behind the back line of the back five of Denmark to get the equalising goal, and the way Sterling reacted, I just thought the dynamics were there. And you know, they had the chances, Denmark, no doubt about it. So defensively we were very good, but I thought going forward it was fantastic.
Yeah, I have to say Saka was really good in that first half. He was causing problems the way that he was able to come inside on his left foot, combined with Kane, forward runs. I actually really enjoyed watching him. Sterling, we know what he's been doing the whole tournament. Kane looked the best that he's looked in the tournament. All right, he scored two goals in the last game, but he was moving better. He was getting on the ball more. He was creating those two chances that he created. The first one that he slipped through Saka for the goal, but the other one that he actually played across, forward run, plays it across, and Sterling actually is in front of goal and he hits it straight at Schmeichel. But I thought that was the best. He led from the front, Kane, and the front three were very good.
But I think we have to touch on the back line as well. You know, we were a bit critical on Pickford, and he probably didn't have the best of games. But Maguire, I've been criticizing him in the past. You know, he got his head on every single thing, and Stones as well. You know, so they were solid.
Pace of Walker as well. There was a few moments when Dolby was
up,
in.
Yeah, he was up and down the pitch, and there was a few some Damsgaard was through in the first half, and they managed to claw that back. So you got to give them credit. They kept England in it at times as well.
There was only one player in the park that sounds harsh. Didn't let them down. Didn't play to the
didn't have
caliber
his best day.
And didn't have his best day. And that was Pickford. So for the goalkeeper to do that on a certain day in England to get through, that's huge.
So Southgate didn't go as forward as much, but I still think he was solid. So, you know, sure, in the last games, he only went forward a couple of times and caused Denmark problems. But in the other games, he's been one of their shining lights in going forward.
Maguire, by the way, who hadn't lost an aerial duel in the Euros coming into the game, I think he topped today duels, aerial duels, clearance and interceptions.
Serious?
He was immense. I think this is the making of him as not even just not a player, as a character, as a leader for England.
Yeah, and do you think of the year that he has had as well? He had the incident in Greece where he was arrested.
Yep.
For an altercation with some fans and things like that. He's had a very tough year. Wow, fair play.
Yeah, absolutely. We spoke yesterday about what would Southgate do. You mentioned the back line. It was a different one to the one that he chose against Germany a couple of games ago. So you'd have to say overall, throw in the substitutes too, the Southgate magic is still paying off.
It is. And, you know, I was the one that probably thought at the beginning of the tournament or 3 months ago, I said, England can win it with the squad they've got, the depth they've got. I believe England can win it. The only question mark I have is Gareth Southgate good enough? And at the moment, he's showing that he is good enough. All of his team selections, all of his tactical changes, all of his substitutes, it's all working off. And the team harmony, that's Gareth Southgate. You know, he of course, he's got other people around him, but he's the one that decides. It's all working and you have to give him credit for it.
And he made a winning substitution. He took Grealish off after actually putting him on. And that's a tough decision. And you saw Grealish sitting down. He bought in. And because he knew there was a final at stake. And that's credit to Southgate. That he's got that whole team on the same page. And he's willing to make the tough decisions to win games.
I'll put my coach's hat on now. It's easier to do that in a tournament situation for a national team than it would be for a club side. Because for a club side, you could actually lose that player for a period in terms of mentally losing because you subbed him on and then subbed him off. But in a tournament situation, Grealish is just going, we're in a final after 50-odd years. England, in my lifetime, have never been in a final. I'm happy to be there. And I understand what he's trying to do. It's team-first attitude. But in a club side, it can work against you.
And I think that's why Gareth has created such a good culture, because there's a few players that have played for England in the past that would not have done that and wouldn't have accepted it. It would have been the arrogance of how dare you. And that, for a man like Grealish, with the quality he's got, to accept that and do it for the team, that, like you say, that is a down to the staff and the management.
Well, you think about it. Foden hasn't really played a massive part in this tournament, and Foden was one of the players of the season. So he's got them with him. He has, and that's an art in itself. That's good management.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And the ability to bring Sancho in out of the cold for the Ukraine game. Foden hasn't been seen since the second game, brings him off the bench. My goodness, what a way to vary things up. Gareth Southgate, the man, is a huge storyline during this tournament, Bridgie. Not just because of everything John's just mentioned, but because of his history at the Euros with England. Gareth Southgate, the man, how will he be perceived back in England? Now, talk us through the story. Talk us through your view of him as a fellow Englishman.
He's a national hero now. He's a national treasure for what he has done to get an England team into a final of the Euros. And you know, since 66, many managers have tried. Bobby Robson was a man that is so admired, like I've said in the past, from English fans because he brought an excitement. He brought joy back to the English fans. Southgate has done that and he's embraced it, but he hasn't been easily led and manipulated by the media. He has done it, and all the players, like John just said, they have bought into it. The staff have bought into it, and the public have bought into it. There's no negativity. And the biggest thing, I've said, it's the players. They are all relatable. They've made themselves so... I don't know what the word is, Dave. You're in the media. They're
approachable.
They're real. Yeah,
and you've got to see the inner sanctum of what is going on. And there's not many managers have allowed that in the past. And I just think he's got it absolutely spot on. History's made. He's been in that environment for a long time with the youths. The youth of England had very, very... We've had a lot of success over the last few years. And I'm very excited. I was just looking at the Spanish team in 2008, John, their golden generation. They went 2008 Euros. They went World Cup in 2010. And they went the Euros in 2012. Might be getting a little bit ahead of myself, but the future for this England team, if they can win this Euros, the World Cup is next year. The experience they've gained, I'm very, very excited, yeah. especially with Southgate.
Southgate is shown that he's very calm, collected, doesn't get over excited and doesn't get too down when things haven't gone well in terms of the Scotland game where they, everyone was criticising, England can't win it playing like this. Today was the first time he let out his emotion. Mm. When everyone went inside, he went and celebrated with those fans. How much that meant to him after what happened in 96, that would have hurt him. And I'm telling you, that would have hurt him from then until now.
He's the second most successful manager England have ever had now.
Yeah. It's a great story because, his perseverance, his, keep on going because it's easy to go hide. Oh, he had a career. He's got enough money. He didn't go hiding. He just
the best
going.
Thing about it? And it cracks me up to think that when England lost Sam Allardyce, right?
Mm.
You go back to that journalist. He should be a national treasure as well. They caught Sam Allardyce out when he got the England job, yeah? And Sam was done for some money. Yep. That was Sam done after maybe, I think, 3 months? Or yeah, there was yet. Only
one game or two
that
games.
That journalist has saved England a lot of years of hurt because Southgate, I'm telling you, it would have been Sam and we would have been absolutely shit.
Yeah, that's probably right.
What has happened, right?
It's fate.
Southgate was not even on the docket or documents for an interview process. Yeah. He walked in and said, you better get this sorted out quickly. We've got a World Cup winning youngsters. There's a lot of... things need to be sorted out. Mm. He sold himself in the interview. He wasn't even in the running for the job, so it was fate, and he stuck up.
He's made it his own personal mission, and he's done it his way. He has done it his way. There was no Cavalier English side. It was done. They are a team. They are a team. They're a team full of superstars, but they are a team. To conclude this match, we've done a backwards match report, but I want to spend the end of this match talking about Denmark, Thomas, because this was an epic encounter because of what your compatriots did today from the off. And at 1-0, you would have to say that was not... It was arguably deserved, or if not that, it wasn't a shock.
No, I think they came out positive. Both teams did. I think it was like a heavyweight boxing fight. I think they were very impressive with their press. They were on the front foot. They didn't allow, Vestergaard. I thought was really good. Kjær at the back. Christensen didn't allow Kane a lot of time on the ball. And a lot of times they actually stepped in and cut the pass out. So that England couldn't progress through the middle. They had to go wide and then the crosses in the box they dealt with easily and in transition as well. They were calm, not overawed with a big occasion, playing at Wembley with, like you would say, at least 50,000 against them, and showed great character, and that was one of my fears, that they would go in maybe, haven't played a lot of games in Copenhagen, obviously been to Baku where they've the atmosphere wasn't that great, and then to come to Wembley and then get that shock playing against one of the favourites, but they weren't.
You just ran out of steam. I think Delaney and Eric's Christensen
and
went off.
In depth, yeah.
And I looked at Tommy in the studio and I could just see you were going, oh, he's gone down. You could just see the life was just coming out of Denmark and you were hanging on.
Yeah, and in hindsight, everything is easier, but I think Cornelius, the big striker, made a massive difference against Wales. He came on and held the ball up really well. He's a physical beast. And then maybe looking back at it, he would have been a better option. But, who's to doubt Josef Poulsen, who played really well in this tournament and just not you know,
it wasn't his day, was it?
No, the ball bounced off him too easily when Denmark needed him to hold it to get players up the pitch, and he lost it too quickly. And then, you know, back defending we were, and that was the key decision.
Mikael Damsgaard, future's bright. 21 years of age. Do you know, he the last person to score a free kick at the Euro, direct free kick in the knockout stages, was Zinedine Zidane, oh, Euro 2000.
Serious?
Damsgaard was not born.
is that born? How long it is?
Yeah. He was not born.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
That's a crazy stat.
It's a dying art, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, this is the first one this tournament. Obviously, we know that. It's the first one for 20 years. But, you know, you sit there and think about every time Ronaldo stepped up, the hype that was towards that. He is an exquisite talent. Sampdoria said he wasn't for sale. That was the other day. They bought him for 7 million euro. Good luck.
we talk about the free kick, but what about just a little bit earlier when he got the ball and he came inside, had no space, and he just missed the top corner by a couple of yards? You know, he's got that ability in tight areas to actually, you know, get a shot away, and he's such a dangerous player. Quality. He's going to be one of the best players for Denmark in this generation coming through.
Yeah, and when you think about it, he wasn't really thought to have a big role in the team. You know, he was going to be the guy coming on late if Eriksen, you know, wasn't playing. You know, and then to step into those shoes and then take that challenge on. You cannot speak highly of him and the character he's shown and coming up at big moments. Like against Russia, he opens the scoring when Denmark needed it, and in this game as well, he steps up. You know,
turning point of the tournament for Denmark.
It was. Oh, yeah. And you can just see what he's lacking now. He's lacking a little bit of physicality. He's lacking a little bit of stamina because in the games he's played, he's run out of legs sort of at the 60-minute mark, and he did it as well today. But when he builds a bit of that and plays more games at a higher level, he'll be a top player.
That's where it's different. Like when you look at Pedri, 18, and he's able to run out 120 minutes, but it's a different position. His position is more that you're running at the same pace for a long period, whereas Damsgaard, because he's playing up higher, there's a lot of more high speed running and you tire a lot quicker. And you're right. After 60 minutes, he had to take him off because with the quality that he had on the pitch and the way he was playing, you never would have wanted to take him off.
John used to play in that position up front, but he also played like Pedri's pace. There wasn't many high intensity sprints.
And his passing?
Yeah, it was never quality of Pedri.
How about this tournament? Pedri, Saka, we spoke, I mean, 19 years old. People take that for granted because he plays for Arsenal. He's amazing. Doku, Isak, and of course Damsgaard today. Some absolutely fabulous players there. Can I throw a little spanner in the works too? I just got set this rule for the wall for the Damsgaard goal. And Danes were very clever. They had the three players really right up in Pickford's view. Where three or more defending players form a wall, all attacking team players must remain at least 1 meter from the wall the ball is in play. And they weren't.
Yeah,
so there you go.
Oh, so it's a fair.
There you go.
The free kick shouldn't have been. It was just an even up.
So the referee had a shocker. You're saying that he didn't get the rules right today. Penalty should have been. So, and we haven't spoken about the Kane possible penalty earlier on in the game.
Yes.
Now, a lot of people go, how is that not a penalty? Well, he whistled for a free kick against Kane just in the challenge before. Whether that was a free kick or not, I don't think it was, but he did whistle, so they couldn't go back and check that penalty.
That's a really good shout. And do you know what else? That comes back to the pressure thing that you said, Thomas. He's probably sitting there thinking, thank God we don't have to go to VAR because I've just pulled up a technicality before. 6 weeks ago, what would VAR have done if that was an empty stadium and Raheem Sterling's driven into a box?
I have no penalty.
No, he's gone back. He's looked at it. He's looked at it in slow motion and he's gone, no penalty.
Are we back to the penalty?
I just had a thought about the crowd. Sorry, Vijay. I just had a thought that it's great to have crowds back, but that's the theatre that it actually builds up to another level. So
there's talk on social media now. It's not from me. It's that Immobile and Sterling are going to have a dive off.
The swimming federation's coming.
The thing about it, Sterling didn't stay down as long.
You know what?
Because they got a penalty. He was like, yes.
I saw, yes. Immobile, it's a national scandal. Sterling, it just happens.
That's one of your best, John.
Gents, one last word from The Athletic in the UK for a view from them. Dominic Fifield had this to say, summing up the game a bit earlier.
A remarkable evening at Wembley in the din of the national stadium, delighted din as well for the majority. I just felt that this evening was almost a role reversal from that game at the Luzhniki Stadium against Croatia at the 2018 World Cup in that semi-final when England had started so well and then faded badly. This time, England played the role of Croatia. They were the increasingly strong as a team and energetic. They used their substitutes very, very well. They had options off the bench. They even substituted a substitute. That shows that they were managing the game in the correct way and in a ruthless way as well. They may have lacked a bit of Luka Modric's guile from that game in the semi-final 3 years back. But it was Denmark who were the team that were tiring for long periods. They were the team that was stretched. There were long periods of extra time where they didn't even have a full complement on the pitch given injuries and the fact they'd used all their substitutes. And the luck undoubtedly went with the English this time.
But Bridgie, it would be remiss of me not to give the final word to you today to sum up how you're feeling right again. Now as we go on. This is my long-time sparring partner on the Gaga, but I would have given it to Tommy if they won. I'll give it to you on Monday if Italy win.
Thank you so much, Dave. I would just like to say to Tommy and to Denmark, you have done your nation proud with all these animated reactions that we've seen from you on the studio floor, your team, your
for
nation.
For all the potatoes you grow.
Yeah, the food that you have cooked inside the hotel for us, a little bit of Danish delicacies, and the way that Denmark have performed this tournament after what went on with Christian Eriksen. I just think they have been a worldwide hit. There were so many people around the world wanted Denmark to win and get one over England. There were so many English fans wanted England after so many years of hurt. We went on to do it. It was a close encounter, like we said. History has been made. Well done to Southgate, all his players, all the staff that are behind him, because it's never been done since 66. It's a huge moment. I'm so honoured and proud to be a Three Lion today.
That's some of the best things you've ever said there, Bridgie. Credit to that. Thank you.
With Denmark, as much of a hit since ABBA was for Denmark?
Oh, this world.
I'm not biting on that, Johnny. I'm not biting. You know what? Yeah.
That was such a beautiful end, and then we've just gone back
sorry,
to that.
Sorry.
Mamma mia. Here we go again. Mamma. You can go home now.
We're just going to bring the camera. Oh, wait, Bridgie, you're not staying in the hotel. I was going to say we could bring the camera in and just watch you for the next couple of days, but no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. Everyone out there, that's enough for today on this game. Of course, what we have, we will have your preview podcast before Monday morning's final, 5 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, but a 1 hour build-up, 4 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on Monday morning. Before then as well, there's the Copa America final on Sunday at 10 a.m. That's Brazil, Argentina, Neymar, Messi, the quest for that individual trophy. What a game that is. So, until the next episode of the Gangapod, as ever, enjoy your football.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.